You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. I'm Kieran Moran, Managing Director of Resource Industry Media. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Queensland and Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Barry Maluga, co-founder and director of Emergency Response Readiness and Recovery, a consultancy that assists the mining and industrial sector on emergency response planning, readiness and procedures, and developing recovery guidelines, including auditing emergency response operations and on emergency vehicle acquisition. Prior to establishing the business, Barry managed the Bilawila Command of Queensland Fire and Emergency Services, where he led the agency in natural disasters and emergency incidents, working within the mining, industrial and private sector, including all levels of government. Welcome, Barry, to the program.
Thank you, Kieran. Nice to be here.
To give us a little bit of a rundown about the business, tell us a little bit about the business.
The business was born, I guess, over a couple of drinks and a pizza. A mate and I were sitting down, and he ended up calling me in 2019 and said, we need to ramp up our idea. When you combine his skill sets and my skill sets, we had something pretty unique. So we did a bit of market research and we had a look online, and we couldn't find any companies in Australia doing what our idea was. So we went about setting up the company, and we fully understood that we may not get one client ever. And if that was the case, after 3 years, we'd wind it up. But that's proving not to be the case, and we are getting work, and it's looking pretty good for us. We're taking a steady Eddie approach and just taking things as they come along and learning our business. Like, we know what we're doing, but just trying to grow the business and get it right first time around, so we haven't got to go and fix things up in the future. There was 14 areas of service that we decided we would provide, but that's since grown. We've been approached by a local industry here in Gladstone to write their hazard mitigation plans, and we've since entered into a contract with that company, and we're currently writing the plan. I'm actually working on it today, and they've also engaged us to conduct their hazard mitigation burns year on year. So our company is not about coming in and do one job and that's the end of it. We're looking for work that goes year on year, and looking at diversifying our revenue streams. So we've since the company formed, we've added hazard mitigation planning and hazard mitigation burning, hazard reduction burning to our list of services that we provide.
So with those services, so what you did bypass a little bit about what actually the business does there. So emergency response, readiness and recovery. Tell us a little bit about that. I suppose, what was the original idea?
Both my experiences and my business partner's experience, he's 37 years in the mines, shift supervisor in the mines, 25 years mines rescue, and also 25 years or 27 years now in urban fire service as an auxiliary captain. Our experience was that not in most mines, they're non-compliant in relation to their response capability. So we saw a need to jump in and form a company that could deliver legislative compliance was our initial aim, and then we realised that it didn't just apply to the mining sector; it applied across the industrial and private sectors as well. So, any organisation that under government legislation is required to provide an emergency response capability, we can come in and we can, if you've already got one set up, we can actually come in and audit what you have and see and just reference that across the current legislation and make sure it is compliant. We can also look at improvements in your response capability and writing readiness plans that match up with your business. So we do that on an on-site basis. And sitting in with that, we found that most, because we initially were aiming at the mining sector, but we realised that there's more, probably more work for us in the industrial sector. And what we realised was that by starting this business, and looking at what was available, that there's a lot of work out there and work that needs to be done. So we can actually come to your facility, look at your response plans, audit those, make recommendations where improvements could be made. We'll come in and also through a third-party train and provide agreement, we'll come in and we can train your emergency response crews, incident management for the management team of the facility, using AIMS. There's a whole heap of stuff that we can provide for the response and readiness side of things. But then the other side of the coin was that we found that on the recovery side, so time is money, and each and every time that there's an emergency incident and the business or the industry has to shut down, they're losing dollars. And by looking at their recovery processes, we can actually streamline things to get them back to full production or full operation in a quicker time frame, bearing in mind that safety is always paramount.
Which you did say there when you first started building the business, you said that there wasn't too many businesses offering what you do offer. What were some of the, the miners and also in the industrial sector doing beforehand? Were they more working in-house and setting up this by themselves and self-governing?
There's companies out there doing bits and pieces what we do. So there's plenty of training providers. Like, I want to state right from the outset, we're not a training organisation. There's plenty of training providers out there, and the dollar value or the dollar cost of becoming a registered training organisation for the amount of work that we would do out of, if we were a sole training organisation, that's what we would do. But training is just one of now 14 or 16 areas of service that we provide. But there are companies out there that will do audit. But they're mainly auditing from a first aid perspective. There's no one actually out there doing the full services suite of what we do. There's no one doing the full package. For instance, if you're a fire appliance is coming to end of life, we can come in and have a look at what your appliance is. We can do a cost analysis of refurbishing that appliance or taking the body off of that appliance and putting it on a new truck or going out buying a second-hand appliance or buying a brand new appliance, and if whatever way you go, we can actually oversee the fit out of that to make sure that the appliance is fit for purpose, has the correct emergency response gear on it, and also that it's in the right location on the appliance. We know situations where people have gone out and decided to do in-house. They've gone out and bought a cab chassis, went to put the body on it, and when they went to put the body on it, didn't fit, so they've had to then go and redo the whole lot. So that's one of the services we provide. We also have emergency response equipment, so if you need any sort of emergency response equipment, we can actually procure that for you, looking at your site, what you need on site, and make it tailor-made to suit your site.
What is one of the things that you do find interesting when you do go into some of these businesses? And of course, with the resource and industrial sector, incidents in safety and injury and so forth is a fairly high priority. And of course, because there's more instances of those incidences happening within especially mining and so forth. And of course, we've seen, especially over the last couple of years, a lot more heightened area in relation to government as well, making sure that the mines are a lot safer. But what was one of some of the things that have surprised you going into some companies where they may have believed that they were ready, but they weren't ready? What were some of the issues that was involved there?
They haven't maintained pace with changes in legislation. That's a real big issue. Under the Mining Act and under the mining regulations and what have you, wherever a mine is conducting business, they must have an emergency response capability on site. We know of mines that are full operation that have no emergency response capability on site apart from their first aid capability. So there's, we believe that we've got part of the solution to the deaths in the mining sector, and that's basically what ramped the company up. They had 8 deaths in a very short period of time, and my business partner rang and said, we need to ramp this up and see where it takes us. But then we found out that most of our work is coming from the industrial sector, not the mining sector. So what we found with the mining sector is that it's very hard to break into that field, but once you've broken into it, they generally all jump on board. So We're plugging away at it. We've got a couple of mines that are sort of nipping and having a bit of a bite at what we've got to offer. So we'd really like to get our first mine on site. We've got several industries now that we've got on contract or doing work for in the Central Queensland area. So but we haven't broken into that mining sector yet, which we thought would be our first market. But obviously it's not quite there yet, and hopefully that'll come in the near future.
So let's go back to the beginning. You're a fitter and turner by trade.
Correct.
And you actually 33 years with the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services. So that's where, of course, you get a lot of skills within safety and response and so forth like that.
Yes.
Made you get into that 33, before that 33 years, what made you think about getting into that area of work?
This is going to sound really bad, but the days off. I was working out at Queensland Alumina, and a mate of mine joined the fire brigade, and he was telling me about their working roster, and it was, two 10-hour days, two 14-hour nights. They slept on night shift and then 4 days off, so really 6 days off in eight, and then 6.5 weeks annual leave. And I just said, when do I start? And then when I finally got a job, it took me about 2 years to get on. When I got there, I thought, this is a really, really good job. And I knew that people get old and age catches up with them, and I knew that when I was 60, I didn't want to be running around the hills fighting fire. So I worked my way up through the ranks and finished up as Inspector of Billawheela Command. From 2012 till 2019, I was the Inspector for Billawheela Command. Prior to that, I was 17 years as a station officer in Gladstone, and then prior to that, I was on the truck as a firefighter for 11 years or something like that. Really rewarding job, really, really rewarding job. I got to 60 plus, and then decided enough's enough, and I retired. And next thing you know, my mates are ringing, hey, we need to give this a go. So much for retirement, yeah. But it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I still get to go and do the things I want to do. It's not a full-time job, this business, yet, because the work's just not there, but I work on the business when the work's there, and the rest of the time I go and do retirement things. So, and the beauty about it is I can run this from anywhere in Australia or anywhere in the world. So, I can fly in, drive in, wherever I've got to go. It's really, really good.
So you said there that you really enjoyed the job. It was a really good job, and so you obviously found it inspiring to stay within it, besides the roster in some respects, and maybe sleep it at night and nothing's happening, so you get a good kip. Yeah. But what inspires you? What excited you about the job within the emergency services?
There's not just one thing. I mean, every day, while you're doing the same things every day is different. Like we got our standard work that we did every day, and there's work that's just got to be done. Your vehicle checks, your equipment checks, your training and what have you. It's got to be done. But you could be there, and you could be doing your standard checks on the appliance or on your breathing apparatus, and the alarm will drop, and next thing you know, you could be out at a structure fire, you could be out saving someone's life, you could be out at a truck crash or hazardous material incident, or, it's just the job was, and even, you can go to two jobs, one after another, and both, say two car crashes, both the same type of vehicle, both, say hit a lamppost at the same speed, and no two would ever be the same. It was just, it's such a changing environment, and there's so many factors that or variables that come into it, you'd have to use your brain to figure out how you're going to handle each individual incident. It was a very rewarding career, very rewarding.
So you talked about in relation to the business, and it's only over the last year or so. I think I did meet you about a year ago, and so Emergency Response Readiness and Recovery Consultancy. So as you said, you were retired, and one of your mates decided to approach you and maybe move into this type of business.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit of experience in relation to building the business. It's not easy to do so. It's not easy to keep getting out of bed and making sure that you keep pushing no matter what. How have you sort of built the business, and how's your experiences been with creating it and making it happen?
There's been some challenges, but one of the things we realised early on that if you want to tender on big contracts, you've got to be a minimum of ISO 9001 compliant. So we're working towards becoming ISO 9001 compliant, which is your quality assurance stuff. So we've signed up with a company in Sydney, and we're working through that process. So that was one of the things. Quoting and tendering on the jobs, I worked last year on a quote for a large contract, and I spent about 60 to 80 hours just doing the quote. There were 60 pages in the quote, so that was something I sort of hadn't factored in. I didn't sort of expect that. I thought, oh yeah, you know, a tender will go out and you'll put your quote in, and it might take, you know, might take a couple of days to put it together. I wasn't anticipating spending that sort of time, but. Just I found Gladstone Engineering Alliance. I found them very, very good, and going to the industry days that they have and the things they have at the entertainment centre and what have you. I found that very, very good for networking and making contacts with business, and the conference they have every year. I found that very good. That's actually produced a contract for us. Some of it's been word of mouth, so you know. One industry, we're talking to another industry, you know, with their emergency response capability. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, we're doing this. Oh, who's doing that for you? Oh, emergency response readiness and recovery. And next thing you know, you get a phone call from that other business, and people find out what, you know, what we're actually doing, and they go, gee, I've got a need for that, but I'm not ready for you yet. So we've got three or four companies in the Gladstone region that have indicated that they want to use our services, and they'll be in touch with us in the future. But so yeah, it's looking promising for us. Trying to, I guess, get into the marketplace in the first place, and people look at, oh, what do you actually do? And because we do have so many different areas of service, it's very hard to just sit down, oh, we do ABC. So it takes a bit of explaining, and people sort of look at it and go, oh yeah, and they don't really fully understand. So but yeah, one of the big things we found with and this is, I found this also when I was in the fire service, that every business in Queensland must comply with the Building Fire Safety Act in relation to their fire readiness and fire compliance, fire safety compliance, and a majority of business. And it doesn't matter whether you're a fish and chip shop or whether you're, you know, whether you're a large employer with 1,200 employees, the legislation is the same in relation to requirements. And we found, when we went out and did our building inspections, that the majority of businesses weren't compliant. So that's another service that we offer. We can come into your business and get your fire safety compliant in relation to the Fire Safety Act and the Building Codes of Australia. And then that basically becomes your get out of jail free card. Should you have an incident there and someone should get seriously injured or killed, well then, as long as you've got your fire stuff in order, there shouldn't be any comeback on you as the business owner or the occupier.
And that is actually, as we mentioned earlier, it has ramped up a lot, especially with the government legislation, of course, within the mines, but also the industrial and construction sector as well, where even, you know, the laws have changed in relation to what you can or your business or so forth can be charged with, including manslaughter.
Correct.
What's some of the, I suppose, where do you think the industry is going in relation to safety requirements, and I suppose, where do you think it should be?
Look, I think there's more emphasis and onus being put on to the managers of those businesses. And in February last year, there was a change in the legislation to make senior psych executives accountable for any deaths in the mining sector. And when that was going through, it was funny, actually. You could tell something was happening in Parliament because my phone just went crazy for about 3 weeks. People ringing and seeing what we could offer and what have you. And as soon as the legislation passed and it was no longer in the headlines, the phone just stopped. I thought it was a bit strange. But I think, you know, there's going to be more emphasis put on senior management and their policies and procedures that they've got in place for worker safety. And also in relation to emergency response to make sure that they are compliant with the current legislation. I think, you know, I think the onus is going to be put more on the management side. Whether that's a good thing or not, I still think there's each individual has a responsibility for their own safety. And I think, you know, I mean, I'll give you an analogy to that. As an apprentice, first year apprentice, I hit my thumb with a 4-pound hammer with a full-bodied blow, and oh, it brought me to tears. About 4 years later, 5 years later, as a tradesman, I hit it again with a 4-pound hammer. I didn't cry the next time, but it still bloody hurt just the same. I never ever hit it a third time. You know, so you learn from those mistakes. Unfortunately, in industry and in the mining sector, sometimes those mistakes are fatal. And I guess that's where there's more emphasis on the management structure or management team to get their policies and procedures right. And that's where our company can step in and help, you know.
And that's one thing that I think before the legislation, but having conversations with other companies in the same area of work, where a lot of businesses weren't really taking it seriously. Do you believe that with those changes of legislation and how, you know, individual people can actually be put up on manslaughter charges and so forth,
yep.
Do you think that's made the companies take this a lot more seriously?
I think they're looking at it. There hasn't been a real paradigm shift in that direction. Not that I've seen, but they're definitely sitting up and going, you know what, perhaps we need to look at this, But it seems to be, the attitude that I've experienced, we're okay, we've been doing it this way for 20 years, so we're right, you know.
What do you think is going to make them change that attitude? Is like until, some people do actually get sent to jail?
Well, I think that'll be the first thing. The first time a manager goes to jail on a manslaughter charge because they didn't have the correct procedure or they didn't have the correct training in place or whatever it may be. I think that'll be the first one. Then all the managers go, "Oh, this is real." But you know, in our field, we see it still today, where there's people operating outside of the current legislation, and we go, "Gee, they're running a big risk," you know. And I guess it'll probably take, unfortunately, it'll take a serious injury or a death for them to go, "We need to review our procedures," you know, and that's when you'll see some real change, but. But you know, we get people we talk to people all the time, and you get people will ring us and go, "Oh, gee, we need you out at our work site," and then, "Oh yeah, what's happening out there?" And they tell you, and some of it's, they are horror stories, and yet, you know, in particularly with the mines and what have you, you've had the mines have been at the forefront of media and for all the wrong reasons for the last 2 or 3 years, and yet there doesn't seem to be any willingness to pursue change. And I think, you know, the first senior site executive or mine manager to go to jail will see all the others sort of scrambling to get on top of things, I think, I think that's where it's going to go.
Well, of course, it takes somebody to die to do that. So hopefully, a lot of companies do, and it's one reason why I brought that up, because we do find that, you know, it's more about insurance than safety in the end, and that's what a lot of workers feel with the amount of safety and procedures that they go through. They're more liable than the company, and unfortunately, it does come down to insurance. Some people do believe so. Hopefully, before a death does happen, that some of these companies do go forward and actually implement what you do in your business.
Yeah, it's been my experience, you know, over the past 30 plus years, is that a lot of managers seem to focus on ticking the box rather than to provide a meaningful resolution to whatever the issue may be. It's about ticking the box, you know. "Oh, well, we had this issue and I went and retrained him and I gave him some sort of instruction and I ticked the box. I've absolved my responsibility." And I don't think that's necessarily the right way to go, you know.
That's
been my experience, and, you know, whether it's right, wrong or indifferent, it's not up for me to say, but our company is here, and anyone that, you know, that wants to have a look at their operations and you know, thinks that they may not have looked at it and done a comparison to the current legislation for a long period of time, or, you know, they don't have to use us, they can do it themselves or whatever they want to do. I'm not out there pushing our business, but we are here because we saw that gap in the market.
Well, as it is, Barry, thank you very much for joining. We're at the end of the Connecting Industry podcast. Thank you again for coming on board. If people do want to get in contact with you, how can they?
Through email, mobile phone. Our website is ERRC.com, and on there is all our contact details. You can make an inquiry through there, which comes straight through to through our email system, through to the office. And, you can ring my personal mobile with the details already on there. Or if you want, I can give them over the phone here now.
Give your phone number.
Okay, so 0439 780818.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us, Barry.
No worries. Thanks, Kieran.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.